Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Bauert. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability.
And this is Fred Schanklebrick. And yeah, we're glad you're here. And, you know, in our last episode, Adam, we were talking about your love affair with this new Mercedes that's out that seems to be selling really well. Yet Consumer Reports is saying it's got much less reliability. And one of the thoughts, though, is that on purpose? You know, and I think you mentioned it in the last article that it was that it's a business strategy more than likely.
Yeah. I think that it's a very conscious decision to change their balance between features, reliability, time to market, cost point. Then, you know, I think they've been on that path pretty consistently since, you know, the millennia to where they used to be. Reliability clearly was one of the top factors, and they've been very successful. And I think that this new model, which is a disaster from a reliability perspective to an astounding level, has sold very well.
Well, before we dive into that, I want to also expand it out to some other markets. Let's take a quick break.
Hi, it's Fred here. Just a quick note on improving your reliability engineering professional development. Join Ascendo Reliability and opt in to the weekly update email list. You'll receive a weekly rundown of all the new content added to the Ascendo Reliability site. Click through the items of interest, including articles, podcasts, webinars, and more. Quick, easy, smart. Join Ascendo Reliability at ascendoreliability.com/go/membership.
All right. So, Adam, I mean, what you're talking about with Mercedes essentially compromising the reliability or the durability of their vehicles in order to do some other purpose, like sell cars, for example, that's not unique to the auto industry, right? But I'm curious, and I've worked with companies that they say reliability is important, but then they don't do anything about it. It's just lip service, which is not what I'm talking about. I think it's when they actually position their product in, whether it's a coffee maker or a vehicle or service, it's deliberate what their final actions are. I mean, they might have accidentally gotten to that point, but I think it's a part of what companies can do to offer. But it's got to match what consumers want or expect, right?
I think that's the only way you really can judge them. And this is where I consider success or areas for improvement with my customers is it's simply this. Have you very consciously in advance of the program created product specifications, goals that consider reliability, features, time to market, cost point, you know, all those things, you know, profit margin. And then you should be evaluating yourself on, does the final product match that? So in this case, Mercedes may have had the most perfect success, you know, with everybody did exactly what they're supposed to do, because the way the car came out was exactly the balance they had. Low reliability, high features, very low cost point was a big deal with this model. And they did all that. So if that was their goal, they, you know, I commend them on doing a good job keeping that consistency. But it's interesting for me, somebody who works across many different industries simultaneously, as opposed to when I worked in one specific industry, to see all the different balances that are advantageous. I mean, I do have customers where one new feature that you can bring to market first is advantageous, even if it drops the reliability dramatically to half of what it was.
Right. Now,
it's okay.
Now, that's where I think it has to match the customer, because the first to market and a new breakthrough feature or a disruptive type technology that comes to market is selling to a different kind of person than it's going to buy a mature product that's an ongoing relationship with them. There's the early adopters, and I'm trying to remember the name of the curve. there was some business theory that talked about early adopters, and then there was crossing the chasm and getting into more mainstream product acceptance. But the gist of it was is that the early adopters are willing to take a risk on whether it's quality or performance or feature set or whatever for the latest, greatest, coolest new thing or a particular feature that solves a unique problem they have. And they're going to try it. They're more risk tolerant to poor quality or reliability. Whereas mainstream, they're not going to buy that. They're not, want the, you know, it's like my mom, I think the last car she bought, she said, I want a tape deck because I know they work.
Right.
It says, Mom, you're going to have a hard time finding a car with a tape deck. That'll start, but you know.
But even going beyond just the consumers, regular consumers, is that even within industry, so, you know, capital equipment type stuff, it's interesting to see that. So, you know, one customer I have is in semiconductor, and their customer, which does a continuation of the manufacturing process, will, if there's a new breakthrough and advancement that adds a feature, they can improve their, what they can make so much that they're willing to take tremendous drops in reliability. Mm-hmm. So their yield will go very bad, but it's still worth it to have fewer of them with this new feature. It's still profitable. It's not even like from a cool standpoint, or I want it, or I want to be the leader. They actually can make more money by adding that feature to their manufacturing process, even with less reliability. So, and then I have another customer in medical where their product is all the advancements in that product through its history, that type of product, really has been reliability. So their big offering is a huge jump in reliability, really with little to no feature add. And if they can successfully increase the reliability of, you know, this type of product, they'll dominate the market. And it's really the only thing that's important. So those are two, you know, extremes. It comes back to me, to what I want to see is people to very consciously in advance decide that balance, and then to, through the program, continue to let that balance guide what they do. And you can measure yourself on how well does that final product match the original specifications.
Well, and then the finer arbiter is it profitable? Is it an ongoing business for you? I'm thinking of coffee machines. There are so many out there. There's the very low end that'll barely get water hot and kind of run it through some grounds and you get something out of it. I'm going to be show my coffee snobness here. And then there's other, you know, that are suitable for putting in behind the bar at a coffee shop that are just industrial and have all these wonderful bells and whistles and everything else. Yet there is a segmentation of customers. Right. So one brand may cover that whole range. And I know in desktop computers, for example, there are companies like HP and Dell and others that create a whole suite of computers offerings, everything from the entry level, I'm just going to do email type thing, all the way up to the high end gamers that are pushing the edge of workstation capability and everything in between. So I think reliability is in that mix. And I agree with you on a particular product is be very conscious about where you're positioning it. Yet the final arbiter is, did you understand your customer's expectations for reliability? You know, my mother-in-law wants a computer that just works and she can do email and browse the web. She doesn't really care about anything else. And so I desperately tried to get her to buy a basic intro Mac. And she didn't want to learn the new operating system. And she's been through, I think, 4 or 5 different basic entry-level white boxes that the Best Buy guys offered her. But they just don't have the hardware reliability. And trying to convince her that she needs to buy something that's more durable... It costs another couple hundred dollars. Is she's not connecting that, which is unfortunate. And I was like, it's whether it's cars or coffee makers or computers, setting that up front, which is hard to do, especially if you don't know what market you're in, right? If you don't know if you're in the feature market, if you don't know you're in the durability market, if you don't know if you're selling quality first, or you're selling feature set first, or you're selling on price. I don't know, so with your clients, do you see that?
Yeah, Well, I mean, that's what, you know, so my first point was you measure yourself on, does your final product match your original specifications? And then your point of, does your final product generate profit? So that basically is closing the bigger loop of, do your original specifications reflect what the customer wants, right? That's right. And that's what you're, you know, you're highlighting.
Well, that's the tricky part, isn't it? Right. If you working with this, a product that's a new innovation, they don't really know what customers don't know about this feature yet. How do you go about defining how good it should be early in a program?
Well, I think that can be done. I think it's a matter of investing in it. I mean, the conversation wouldn't be about the feature, it'd be about the delivery. If we could have our product do this, how valuable is that to you? What would you be willing to give up for it? You know, mm-hmm. So in other words, if I can make your car fully autonomous today, you're the only person on the road, you know, with it, it's the only model, what are you willing to give up? You know, and you could give them a list of things. Are you willing to give up reliability to where you don't have to drive anywhere, but, you know, 5% of the time you're going to have an issue, you know, and have to get towed.
Right.
Would you do that? You know?
Right. Right. Well, that's where I think in the semiconductor, the wafer fab guys, they're looking at availability, right?
Yeah.
At some point they got a limited amount of floor space and it costs a ton of room to keep the clean room clean. And if your machine's down, it stops a production line or an auto factory, right? If your welder goes down, that line's down.
Well, hold
money.
On though. It's not that clean cut. What if you could add a feature to the wafer manufacturing thing that doubled how many chips you can put on one wafer, and then it's down 10% more? The math works out that that's profitable.
It is
to have it be less available. Yeah.
At some point, though, the predictability and knowing that I can, because they're going to then start selling and counting on having twice as many wafers per week, right?
Yeah.
And that margin will be eaten up. That'll go away. That'll get you in the door. That'll get you started.
Right.
It gives them some margin. But one of the things that I find with reliability goals is that people want more features. They want them cheaper. They want them yesterday. And they're going to change their mind ongoing.
Right. But the reality is though that so the example you're giving with then they double the chips is what they expect. So then if nobody else can advance past that double the chips, exactly. Now you're competing on reliability again. Mm-hmm. But if somebody comes out the next day doubling that, then all of a sudden the more reliable people with the half, you know. Not, so I think that that's an interesting commentary also to look at with different industries on how they're maturing, right? So something like semiconductor is maturing. The technology is still being invented at a rate that is a thing where features can outweigh things like reliability. Cars, nope. You know, like there's no feature you're going to add to a car that exists today, even autonomous driving, where somebody's going to accept a 10% failure rate instead of a 5% failure rate, which everybody else has. So, you know, I don't know what feature you could add to a car at this point that people would, you know, consider it with a lower reliability. And well, I guess that's not true. I guess
that's my original point is it goes back to the customer is some, you know, we talked about Jaguar in the previous episode and there are people that will buy Jaguars, the late model 70s and 80s vintage Jaguars, because they like making it work. They like doing the auto mechanic stuff. They enjoy the time in the not driving it, because that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's a different customer. Yeah, that's not that right. you're selling something as a hobby, not as a transportation.
Right. It's not that as you defined it as it don't piss me off car. It's one that they enjoy tinkering with and carrying parts around with them.
I have those. I have some of those. Yeah. I have a 40-year-old sports car that I love messing around with, you know, but that's not the one I counted on getting me anywhere.
But that's my point, though, is that as you're creating a product, is you need to understand your customer, is who are you trying to sell this thing to? And what, or if it's a business, what's the business motivations? If it's throughput, or is it feature set, or is it cost advantage, or whatever it is, reliability is going to be offset with that. Now, the other piece you brought up, though, Adam, was at some point, if the quality or reliability or cost or whatever those measures are that are being balanced out and traded off, there's a threshold, right? If reliability is so bad that it just never starts, then it's a non-starter. It's not a product. I don't care how much benefit I get. If it just is in the shop all the time, then it's not a car. It's a mechanics to playpen, right? And a semiconductor equipment, if they sell it and say it'll double your production, it only runs 70% of the time, right? And they're going to do the math. And if that makes sense, they're going to go for it. If it actually delivers, though, and it's only up 20% of the time, they're going to get this, let's get this junk out of here, because it's not meeting that equation. So I think with any product, coffee makers, cars, wafer equipment, there's a floor for all of these things. So I think it's not just the balance of what you're trading off. It's also a minimum threshold that says do not cross.
Yep. Yeah, this was actually the topic for my Rams presentation this year at the Rams conference. So if you know, we could put, I did video it. This is 20 minutes. We can put a link to it in the description. Definitely. But I did entirely focus on how to balance, you know, these multiple goals through product development. And it's a hard one because they all have different metrics. They all have different periods of ROI, and you come to the negotiation table when resources get renegotiated and tighter, and it can easily get lost what the true balance was, you know, and very more often than not, the final product doesn't reflect it. And it's kind of, people are surprised, like, how'd that happen?
All right. Well, let's give you an example here though, Adam. Your paper and your presentation talked about it and the benefits of doing that, right? But let's say you and I are going to jump into the coffee making business, right?
Right.
We're going to make a new widget. It's going to make a perfect cup of coffee. It's going to be smart, so I can start it on schedule or with my iPhone or with Alexa or Google Play or whoever
you're already,
else.
You're already off, Fred. You're already way off.
I want it for me.
For you.
See, I'm the customer, so I know me.
This is why I was going to say you're off, is because that has to all start with your point of that, what is the market you're going after? You have to research the market. You can't just decide, I want to make this way.
That's my kitchen. I'm actually looking for a new one.
Okay.
Yeah, I want it. Okay. And I want one that makes a really good cup of coffee and is smart enabled. So I can say, hey, Alexa, good morning. And she turns on the coffee pot, right? So...
what's your cost point? It better be high.
That's the idea though, is, well, the operations guy comes in or the bean counters come in and they say, hey, you got to worry about cost. We can't pay for all this stuff and you get all these features. You're going to have to price it too much. And then the marketing guy is going to come in and say, you know, if you get it out by October, we'll have it on the shelves for the Christmas market. We have to hit this conference. Right. It has to be working. So now you have no time and we want all these extra features. Yep. And then, you know, the design team comes in and says, wait a second, we don't put electronics next to hot boiling water and steam. That's just not going to work. We can't do that. We don't have the skill for that. We don't know how to do this. We have to hire a bunch of new people. And, you know, each department shows up and has their own set of requirements. Is that the negotiating table you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. That's not the negotiating table. That's a teamwork table. So the negotiating
table
happens.
We've never worked together before. So
well,
what teamwork are you
problem.
Talking about?
Exactly. So the negotiating table happens during the program. What that is that's the initial team, each of them bringing their expertise from their discipline and the constraints around having everything, right? Because you start off wanting everything. It costs $2. It does everything. It flies. And so everybody
cool.
brings...
I want one that delivers the coffee to me. Yeah,
right, exactly. So everybody brings their knowledge from their expertise, but they aren't the champion of that. You know what I mean? The marketing guy can't just argue and stand strong on time to market and not listen to everybody else. He has to also have input and embrace the features part. Mm-hmm. And the engineers have to listen to and embrace ultimately through, they'll figure out a balance on the cost point, you know. And in the end, everybody looks at the specification document and is like, this is good. This is the right balance. And the marketing, you know, and salespeople are, you know, who had the big input of where is there a market to go after? And everybody agrees. So you have to start off with everybody comfortable signing this at the bottom, truly happy and comfortable signing the balance, the specification document.
Yeah,
if you don't start with that, everybody, you know, the way you were describing it, everybody owned a specific objective and that was all they cared about. And that's mm-hmm. how people go about it. And it's, you know, you end up, if you're going to cause a battle, somebody's always going to win. And then those, you know, that's not what you want. You want the original balance you set out.
So you got to start off with that. I'm wincing because the last time I saw a product designed by a committee, I didn't buy it.
What do you mean designed by a committee? Though I'm talking about the product specifications, not designed by a committee.
Well, that's what I mean.
The original,
the specs create, you know, what market are we going after? What price point are we going after? What durability? What's its longevity? What's the business model? All of those pieces go into what we're talking about is setting up, framing the specifications. Then engineers go design and actually put paper to pencil or mouse to keyboard or whatever. And what I mean is that set of specifications. If we make an amorphous glump that's a compromise for everybody, then I suggest that reliability is hard to include in that discussion because it's nebulous until you get more details. And
I disagree. Right? I disagree. No, I totally disagree. If you're going to make a new coffee machine, you could easily do research and find out what the standard reliability is of different coffee makers at different cost points. If you want, you know, you figure out what level you want to compete at. Right there is a reliability goal that you have to meet or exceed. And you decide, and or not meet and exceed. You might say, we're adding so many new cool features that we know our customers will be okay with a little bit less reliability.
Right. Or, so it's the early adopter group we're going after. And if I have the Wi-Fi bit.
Right. Or it could be we know that everybody loves this new type of coffee machine, but everybody's complaining for the past couple of years that it's been out that the reliability is crap. If we come up with a good reliability one with the same existing features, we're going to kill, you know, it's very conscious. What's going on here? I can't say the word.
Conscientious. No, that's not.
Well, right. I think it's funny. I can't say the word conscience. Like I'm conscious.
Anyway. Yeah, well, I have trouble with other words. That might be a subject for another one. the idea though is there's going to be a champion for any particular product. And I think they have to build that consensus and build.
Can we use the word expert, not champion? See, champion's where it goes wrong, in my opinion. There's an expert that helps. Well, this is the change I want to see happen in product development, not champions, because then somebody, if you create a competitive atmosphere, somebody is going to win in competitions, people win. So that means that that single product factor wins. And that's not the point. Like that's not, you know, like you can't have time to market win at the compromise of reliability, because then if reliability was a key part of your market objective, then what the hell is the point of getting it out on time? You know, so I just don't like that. I like that people are experts and are bringing in from their expertise, you know, we're all counseling each other. They're all there as advisors to each other to, in the end, all kind of agree on the right balance by hearing each other. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too hippie with it, too kumbaya, and everyone's going to work together. But I think that when that type of culture is present, I think you have a much better chance of taking what was a very intelligent, well-thought-out product specification set and having an end product that looks like it and not get lost along the way.
What I found good about your presentation and I thought was the value piece of it was that it's not this, you know, sitting around a table and say, yeah, we need to do all that stuff and put specs down, is actually do the math, do the research, do the understanding of what are the trade-offs. So if reliability is important to your customer, well, how important? If it's important to your bottom line, that translates into a target for reliability over some duration, which sets your warranty, accruals rates and costs and so on. So I know what you're talking about. And yet I think what we need to emphasize is that it's not just, oh, yeah, we want to make a coffee maker that does all this stuff and lasts for 10 years. Is that technically feasible? Is that what the market really wants? Is that doable between now and Christmas when we want to ship it? Does everybody understand from their point of view, their expertise, that here's the window that we're creating to create these specifications and here's the math behind it?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Exactly.
Okay.
Oh yeah. And then sticking with that, having that be your guiding forces through the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, that's a different story altogether, isn't it?
Exactly. But you have to start with what we just said to even have a chance of that.
That's right. Well, let's hand it off to our listeners. You know, what's your experience with product development in that early stage? What I'd really like to hear, Adam, and like to hear from the listener is, you know, do you get invited to those early concept and just defining the specifications for a product? Is reliability considered a expert to help define what the specifications are? Or is it just handed down from on high and you have to deal with it? Which I hope is not the case. And then we'll have to come back at them and talk about, well, how do you stick to that? So if you do get a good set of specifications, including reliability, is how do you maintain that balance? And it will shift over time. As you get closer to deadlines, we all know that the deadline becomes so dominant that our decision-making changes. So we'll have to come back and talk about that.
Yep.
So, sound like a plan? Can you stick to that? You signing up for it?
Exactly. I agree.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks much, Adam. Talk to you again.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.